Welcome back to PageCast. My name is Dan Corder. This is a very dangerous interview, not for you, but for me, but not in the way of like being in physical danger, although this book is full of physical dangers, but because I, as a professional interviewer, am in danger of being overwhelmed by my fandom and excitement about this book. And when that happens to an interviewer, you'll notice because they start asking very niche, very specific questions because they want to know more about the minutiae that they've thought about a work that they really love, instead of doing the fundamentally important job of actually asking relatable questions that will help you, someone who hasn't read this yet, to actually understand what's going on. So at the end of this interview, we'll find out if I could keep myself together or not. The book in front of us is called The Ego Trip by one of my favorite just writers. His name is Kimon Dekhriev. He was my water polo coach. Let's just not have any conflict of interest. That did once happen. Mm-hmm. But he has since become one of the most important documentary, broadly, like, you know, nonfiction writers in the whole world. He's written phenomenal works like Poacher. He's written for National Geographic and The Guardian and New Yorker and The New York Times. And one of those New Yorker pieces about toad, specifically a Sonoran desert toad in Mexico, and how it's become one of the most important, exciting, and potentially scary psychedelics in the world is what this book is about. And specifically, the, I'm going to say, cult leader, shaman man from Mexico, Dr. Octavio Rettig, who has caused this extraordinary rise in the popularity and the importance of toad. So, Kimon, lovely to see you again.
Thank you for that.
Let's talk about this book.
Thank you for that intro. It's very sweet.
Okay, I'm going to start with just one dangerous move as an interviewer. My absolute favorite moment was discovering the brief existence of Hans, Franz, Peter, and Brian. Uh-huh. Do you remember them?
Yes.
But those, when you go read them, the book, you will discover just a delightful example of you coloring in the story so thoroughly and beautifully with little, like, you know, little joys and little trinkets of different random, you know, flavors and textures of the book and the story. But let's start with Dr. Octavio Rettig, how you came across him and this new phenomenon of toad.
Sure. 2020, a long time ago now, I was living in the States and looking for stuff to work on, feeling very out of my depth, to be honest, having left South Africa where I had a sense of who to talk to and what was going on. And so I went back to sort of my old beat of looking for wildlife, crime, poaching economies, and came across a story about psychedelic toad poaching, which was a string of words I'd never kind of imagined encountering. And from the beginning, the kind of dissonance like embodied in that was fascinating to me, because the end product is this molecule that people have divine transcendent experiences on. And the idea that that was getting obtained from a harmful exploitative supply chain just seemed interesting. I imagined it at the time being maybe a 2,500 word story. And then as I started looking into toad smoking and finding out about this molecule, which we'll talk more about, and these toads, which are just freakish and fascinating and bizarre, and I love them.
Incredibly ugly.
Very ugly. Very ugly.
Grotesque.
Very ugly, as toads are. I mean, toads, like, part of what makes toads successful evolutionarily is that they're repulsive. They're there to kind of, because they can't run very fast. You know, they're unlike frogs, they got squat legs. They should be easy to eat, and they're often large. The Sonoran Desert toad is like the size of a small chicken. Mm-hmm. It can grow to. And so they make themselves repulsive with defense toxins and warts and all the things that toads are kind of famous in folklore for. Point being, this toad has a very particular magical poison. And in the past decade or so, the practice that was formerly very niche of extracting and smoking that has become more popular, due largely, I found out, to like the evangelizing efforts of one man,
yeah,
Dr. Octavio Rettig. And so I started reading about him and got sucked into a very different story, yeah, about a man on a mission to heal the world with toad medicine, as he, yeah, called it, but also a very dark sort of series of hidden secrets around him and around the practice,
which ironically he often posts about on his YouTube channel.
Yeah, I mean,
he's
a fascinating figure. So he
born with a sci-fi superhero name. Octavio Rettig is a Star Trek character.
On New Year's Day,
I mean, yeah. What more do you want?
Yeah.
And he's an assistant chemist in a pharmacy with a crippling addiction to a multitude, an absolute plethora of drugs.
Yes.
Having, even from young as a child, been this prodigy, charismatic talent. Like there was that story of him convincing his friends to give them their money in like junior school because he'd, I think, figured out the way to win a lotto or something. And anyway,
that's what he said.
They lost all their money.
Very persuasive man from a young age.
But suddenly is experimenting with all these drugs, cripplingly addicted to all of them, and then tries through the recommendation of a friend to smoke out of a light bulb with a lighter, toad, which is a toxin, well, at least the toxin part of a toad from its glands that can be secreted and like basically just squeezed out of them, kind of like milking a cow, I guess.
More like popping, is it?
More like popping, is it, right?
Yeah.
And suddenly experiences what he claims is this transcendent and psychedelic trip, which frees him from a bunch of addictions and removes the hunger that many addicts feel, mm-hmm. this kind of compulsive physical body desire to go and, you know, treat their fix, and then decides this is it and starts both mass harvesting and producing toad, or at least getting supplies, and just giving it to people for free, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. And it became, then it becomes clear that within this toxin is 5-MeO-DMT, mm-hmm. which is known as the God molecule.
Yeah. Good synopsis. He, in addition to all of that, while experimenting with other psychedelics, before he kicked his crack and other addictions, he had a psychedelic experience where he experienced the voice of God. He had formerly believed himself to be an atheist, and received a message saying that you, if you so choose, can heal yourself and humanity. So when he then had the toad experience, which commonly is, people report, extremely profound, there's like a, he's got the name, born on New Year's Day.
He's got the hero's origin story. Got
ready to go.
Call from God.
And then he went and spent the next 15, going on 20 years now, sharing this, believing that his duty was to kind of awaken humanity and to share this experience. So 5-MeO-DMT, super fast acting psychedelic compound.
Like a 30 minute trip.
Yeah, the effects take, if you inhale it, the effects take hold within seconds and frequently lead to a complete dissolution of the ego. So it feels like one is dying and consciousness sort of basically stops, which the neurochemistry and neurobiology, that is fascinating. People are starting to study it now. It hits a different receptor to most other psychedelics. And then people pop into the state, which they describe in sort of woo-woo mystical terms that you would hear from meditators, that you would hear from all sorts of spiritual practitioners, you know, all is one, connected to everything, white light.
But also thousands and thousands of people, some of you whom you met when you went and spent time with Octavio, saying, I was crippled by addiction. And from the first trip, I was freed of all these addictions that had haunted me and ruined my life.
Yeah. So whether it's the mystical experience itself, people like experiencing this divine sense that they've never felt before, or if that's a byproduct of other interesting things happening in the brain, people still don't know. There's another theory that consciousness stops because your brain just sort of gets shut down. It's like a reboot. Like off, on, and then you come back on, and then there's these like resting state networks, they're called, which is like habitual neuronal patterns that just fire together. So you'll get like stuck in loops of thinking, which is something I can relate to. I think most people can, whether it's obsessive thinking about things. This is just like poof, and then you reboot up and then you're good to go. So how it works, not quite sure, but Dr. Octavio, who became known as El Doctor Sapo in Mexico,
because he's Toad Doctor,
the Toad Doctor, or the Toad Prophet, people called him, amassed this following of thousands and thousands of people who had had, most of them, the most profound experience of their lives. You know, it takes half an hour or less, but it can feel like lifetimes in the experience. And each of them then went out and told their friends. And so within a few years, he was traveling the world, like an ayahuasca medicine person would, like there's a sort of frame for that, but he was doing it with the substance that most people had never heard of.
So you were talking, you do a really good job in the book of showing the branding, the promotion, like that comes naturally to him, and just a lot of the deception also. So there's one moment in the book where you write about how Dr. Octavio at one point told you that no screening is required for taking this drug. It's good for everyone. And then you said just a few months later in another interview with you directly to your face, he said, oh, these kinds of pre-existing conditions are not appropriate. So you saw that happen in real time. Mm-hmm. He got co-signed by the United Nations Association of Venezuela and then stuck UN logos that he'd edited to have a feather and a toad or something on his car.
So backstory of that was so part of his appeal, like a critical part of his appeal, is shortly after his healing experience with Toad and starting to serve it to people, he became aware that there was this like long-standing anthropological mystery about whether people in ancient Mesoamerican civilizations had used toads psychedelically. So there's like Mayan artworks of toads that are suggestive maybe of altered states.
Or at least some kind of ritual, right?
Some kind of ritual.
Yeah.
And this literature dated to a time, the 60s and 70s, when Western global North researchers were kind of cottoning on that there were these long and fascinating histories of psychedelics use across the Americas. Ayahuasca, hallucinogenic mushrooms, morning glory seeds, peyote, like a large number. And then there's these toads, and also like across cultures, toads are sort of associated with magic and transformation.
All around the world, yeah.
All around the world. So Octavio came across this literature where people speculated that toads had been used psychedelically. Nobody had ever really found any conclusive proof. There were some really colorful attempts at,
which were largely debunked.
Largely debunked.
But this is the marketing and promotion. This is the one part of his origin story that's missing that he needed, it seems, where if you are going to try and encourage the woo-woo whites, or at least the spiritual people of the world, to try something Africa Burnish, Burning Man-ish for international audiences, then you need an indigenous origin myth story to be true.
And that's precisely what he found. And
amongst the Seri people.
Yeah, so Mexico. Just in northern Mexico, in sort of narco-trafficking territory, broadly speaking, on a remote stretch of coastline, is this tiny, isolated, deeply impoverished indigenous community called the Seri, who at the time that Octavio connected with them numbered about 1,000 people.
Yeah.
They were almost wiped out in a literal genocide.
They were down to 160 people in the 1920s, you wrote, I think, something like that.
Yeah.
It was barely anyone.
So centuries of conflict with Spanish and then later Mexican, I suppose both colonists, in their sovereign territory. And for people in a South African context, it would be like your most hardcore Cape Flats community transposed out into a remote desert location. It's an such a harsh environment.
Tiny towns. Everyone's addicted to crystal meth.
Huge addiction problems.
There are cars, burnt out cars on the streets.
Yeah.
Like people are living in what's it like plain brick,
prefab concrete homes built by the Mexican government in the 70s, and a few nicer ones owned by people who've managed to make some bucks.
But Octavio went there
and
gave some toad to some elders' children who helped them with addiction.
Yeah, he went and served this medicine, as he called it, and he connected up with some people. So the reason there's such a big crystal meth addiction there is because it's in
the
corridor where all the drugs go from Mexico up into the United States. You know, it's what you read about, like where all of that stuff happens.
And so much worse than Netflix portrays. Like the level of brutality, the level of harsh, unforgiving, awful, rude communities.
No, it's a radical place. It's a radical, radical place, which is also in the indigenous habitat of the toad, only psychoactive animal on the planet. So Octavio went, heard that there was a problem, served toad, and emerged very quickly with a deeply seductive origin story for the practice, which was that this was an ancestral spiritual tradition of the Seri community that had been wiped out in the colonial age when they had been reduced to 120 people or something, and that he had resurrected it, and that people in the community were now finding their medicine and authorizing him to share it.
Because they co-signed him.
Yes. So then he got these letters from them saying that you're a medicine man, you're authorized to share our traditional medicine with the world. That's when he got this sort of United Nations adjacent affiliation, but such a powerful story that he then emerged with, healed myself, healed a tribe.
Resuscitated their tradition.
Resuscitated a tradition and now here to share it with you. And so people who smoked toad with him believed that that was what they were getting. And I have no doubt that that did spectacular things to their trips because so much of a psychedelic experience is contingent on what one is feeling and expecting from it.
But then by 2018, more and more dark horror stories, because those unfamiliar with taking any kind of drug, but particularly any kind of psychedelic, may not know that you need to be well-prepped, well-informed, you need to be guided through the process, you need to have aftercare, you need to really be helped, because if it goes wrong, your brain and your mind can spiral and it can become some of the most awful, damaging, permanently mentally scarring experiences you could ever have. And more of these testimonies started coming out of people saying that Octavio had completely mishandled them irresponsibly in the way that he administered some of these trips, left them in gardens unmonitored, got a cattle taser to electroshock them to remove blockages, physically assaulted some of them. And what was interesting was you describe these testimonies, these guys basically being bullied off the internet by hardcore Octavio disciples who'd had transcendently brilliant experiences. But Octavio's cult-like following had already developed its own defense mechanism to delegitimate anybody who criticized.
Yeah.
But then more and more stories about sexual assault started coming out, and he had these inappropriate relationships with people who he led on trips. And you do describe how some psychedelics cause a rush of sexual desire in people on those trips. Mm-hmm. But also Octavio showed off his number of sexual exploits with an erstwhile friend and enemy of his. They were doing a count competition between them.
Yes.
And then one girlfriend was found dead in an underwater cave. And in the next 4 years, two and then a third person died during those trips. And Octavio talks about it plainly and commonly. He makes YouTube videos about it. He tries to explain it away. He says it's not his fault. It's not the medicine's fault. It's the victim's fault. But that led to a hit in about 2018, where at the first ever World Toad Forum, or whatever it was called, all of the other practitioners of toad tried to have it out with him and say, you need to start practicing ethical behavior. We're becoming a mainstream drug.
Or just being more cautious. I mean, this is arguably the most powerful psychoactive experience available to humans. And the kind of its vector into the world from being this very fringe psychedelic practice to something much more mainstream was this man who took almost no precautions. So he would serve it in groups. There would be no preparation. So you would hear there's this new medicine and you would rock up, and then next thing you'd be smoking toad and someone next to you would be in the midst of their trip. And that worked. Like, for a surprising number of people, it worked. But for a number of people, it was hellish.
There were no dosage measures.
No dosage. And sort of like his philosophy is that there's this divine experience waiting for you if you have the ego death experience. And if you get stuck or you have a bad trip, it's because you're blocked. It's because you're resisting. And many, many psychedelic practitioners would say that's when you need to slow down. It's when you need to do a debrief, talk about what's coming up for you, maybe do some journaling.
You said intention setting.
Maybe walk away. Maybe come back.
Yeah.
Octavio was like, he had one lever to pull, and that was more. So it's like you didn't break through, with this kind of undertone that you're to blame. Like, you've got some inner darkness or you're too fearful. Smoke more toad. So there's videos, again, which he posted on his own YouTube, of him forcing like half a dozen toad hits on a guy who's running around panicking on a beach in Venezuela and screaming and trying to run into the ocean. Octavio's like kicking him in the ass and making him do push-ups, like the sort of persona of the sports coach who's really trying to like
help you
but by being super fierce. I would say radically inappropriate for the substance. Some people disagree. And so these conversations had been going on for quite some time. They peaked in 2018. But because these videos would come out, people would pop up on the Facebook forums for toad smokers saying, I have been feeling radically dissociated. I haven't been able to sleep. My husband almost suffocated. Another thing Octavio would do is if people stopped breathing in their sheer terror, he would pour water down their throats or up their noses to kind of provoke a a spontaneous gasp reflex and get them to breathe.
Just push that rapé snuff up their nose.
This radically aggressive tobacco blow them up. So imagine your consciousness is semi-dissolved and then your nose starts stinging with like a macro dose of nicotine.
Insane.
It's like, and then people died. So at least 4 people died with him. And eventually there was this kind of community reckoning where an open letter was published that documented a whole lot of this, both by him and the guy who introduced him to toad smoking, and then his big rival, a guy named Dr. Jerry, who did a bunch of sinister stuff as well. And that was kind of all 2020 by the time I started looking into it. That was all sort of there. So it's not like I went and cracked it wide open. It was sort of quite well known. The surprising thing when I eventually went down to meet him, because I got an assignment and I went to go meet Octavio, little to nothing had changed. And we can talk more about being in his company. But
so that was my next question. Sure. I literally want to know what it's like being around this man. Because he sounds like every single cult leader story I've ever heard of in one person. True, it's extreme.
He
sounds like your description of meeting him for the first time, where all of his acolytes are following him. He picks you up at a gas station, having seemingly ghosted you, and then goes to a house, walks inside. You guys are all expecting him to leave. And after about an hour, you walk and discover him rolling a joint. He does a bunch of interviews. People are saying he's the best. There's a Sri Lankan photographer who's quit his job to follow this man around the world, sold his house to get there. And then he just goes on his way and takes selfies while driving a car, nearly crashes it. And everyone's entirely chilled. And then he arrives like a Jesus returning figure in this Seri town. Everyone's trying to touch his clothing and welcome him or whatever. And then he just administers toad. It sounds utterly unhinged. What was it like being around him?
He has a magnetic personality. And my job as a reporter is primarily to cultivate some kind of rapport with the people I'm writing about. So I had a great time with him. He's a charismatic guy. Mm-hmm. I was astonished by how wide open the kind of access was and how unselfconscious he was and the people around him. Again, it was fairly well documented that he'd been accused of some pretty heavy stuff.
Got off a homicide charge.
Yeah, I mean, that was mentioned as well. He's actually faced 2 homicide charges as far as I'm concerned, or as far as I'm aware. The interesting thing as I spent more time with him was also observing this kind of shift that would happen, where he could be exceptionally, like I said, magnetic. Like someone you wanted to spend time with, funny, interested, self-aware, like the kind of popular kid at a party who's actually quite a nice guy. Yeah. Like that sort of, you know, can't help but like him. He's quite handsome, quite full of himself, but in a sort of likable way.
Makes you feel like he is sincerely interested in you.
Sincerely interested. Mm-hmm. But as the days progressed, often this kind of shift would start to occur. He smokes a lot of weed, which is fine. No issue with that. And then serving toad and this kind of alter ego would emerge from him, who was quite belittling of others, quite conspiratorial, very defensive. And it was really interesting to kind of observe and feel this shift, where we'd be kind of buddies in the morning and he'd be super open, be asking me anything. And then he'd sort of go on these rants in half English, half Spanish about being misjudged and people having vendettas against him. And, you know, that some of the people who died with him, that it was their fault and that they died in the hospital. It was like this tyrannical, authoritarian toad god figure, like the dark god, and there was also kind of a small ethical conflict that I felt being around him, because I believe that if people are having very deep psychedelic or emotional experiences, that there needs to be some kind of holding or container around that, and there was none.
And I had
to keep parking my own kind of caretaking instincts to check in with people. And then also the sense that here I am writing a story And like, I haven't even been introduced as a reporter. So every day I would like dress kind of like this. I had a collared shirt. Always kept a notebook. So I just really wanted everyone to know
why the hell I was there. Form reporter.
I was trying to very much perform like I'm the square.
Yeah.
And I'm not part of this.
And you obviously weren't taking any toads, so.
No, he really wanted me to.
I was sure he did. I haven't asked you that, but I was sure that he really wanted you to try.
Really did. And I didn't feel like that would be appropriate for a million reasons.
Yeah. So there's so much more in this book. It's so phenomenally told. The way that for each of these different kind of strands of the story, you've gone so deep and explained them in such fascinating ways. I really appreciate them. But one part that we haven't spoken about yet, considering how many thousands of people have had these transcendental, life-changing experiences, and I have no reason to disbelieve thousands of people from around the world who say that this God molecule experience via toad smoking has caused them a release from mental inhibitions, depression, anxiety, suicidal ideation, a variety of addictions. And so more and more now, there is this serious inquiry, as you mentioned, into not just broadly psychedelics being reintroduced into therapies and being used as ways to treat all kinds of mental afflictions like PTSD, informal doctoral kind of like classic medicinal settings, but in particular, 5-MeO-DMT. Can you talk a little bit more about where that seems to be going?
Yeah.
Because of or in spite of Dr. Octavio.
Yeah, so it's a really weird wrinkle in the story that the substance that has long been regarded as the most extreme and for much of its history has been completely marginal and obscure, within a decade is sort of one of the smart bets to be the psychedelic compound that makes it through and becomes a clinical treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's chiefly because it's so powerful and it's so fast acting. So to get psychedelic experiences into the real world, into clinical settings, they need to do a number of things. They need to get regulatory approval, which is extremely complicated, costs a huge amount of money. They need to work and, then they need to be scalable. So you need to compare a half-hour trip with taking mushrooms and being under the influence for 5 hours, where you would need a specialist therapist, potentially two, to be with you. Imagine how much more expensive that would get. So there's kind of like a market-driven drive towards this substance, which is horrifying to a lot of people who work with it, because the idea of it being what psychedelic naive, clinically depressed or PTSD or whatever people being guided into and then not being held in the way that underground practitioners who are more responsible in Octavio, because I should say that there's loads of people who are completely different to him and his approach. But I just think it's a really fascinating tension about taking this ethereal, otherworldly experience and integrating it into the real world. And that's sort of a theme that's interested me throughout the book is what happens when that meets this messy society that we live in. And there's a lot of dissonance, a lot of paradox. Clinical trials are ongoing with 5-MeO-DMT. They've gone really well. I suspect that more and more reports are going to come out of people having really hard times making sense of what's happened to them afterwards.
And there's so much more to say on this exact issue because big pharma, market-driven capitalistic processes to fight over different trials and to lobby things like the FDA and the US government.
There's IP wars happening. So people are like, there's patent litigation right now over the God molecule, which I just think is the most absurd thing. Also, there's a huge push to administer the substance without any accompanying psychotherapy.
Mad.
Because of a whole lot of things that make sense, like in one set of logic, but make absolutely none from the logic of people who actually work with the substance. Octavio thinks it's all bullshit. He thinks everyone should smoke toad. And I will just say that people should not smoke toad. And if you're curious about the effects, use the synthetic, because the original thing that I got into it for, the toad poaching, these magnificent toads are like vanishing. They're getting tossed in buckets. They're getting left out in the sun. They're getting squeezed so many times that their little glands bleed. Whether or not you care about toes, I don't think anyone wants to have their kind of transcendent experience be at the expense of that.
Entirely.
And the synthetic is just as good, according to people who have tried it. And I'm not commenting on the record about whether that's me.
Kimon de Kruijff, this is really one of my favorite books. It's called The Ego Trip. Go read it now. I know that we've had such a thorough and deep discussion, but this is truly only scratching the surface of an absolutely phenomenal read, which really plumbs the depths of so many different strands and tendrils of this story. Thanks, man.
Thank you very much.
Can't wait for the next one.
Ooh.
Get writing.
Oh.